First off, welcome everyone to the chamber forum this morning. And I want to thank the corn growers and Devon Legion for hosting this morning. And before we move any further, let's stand and
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That caught me by surprise.
I thought I'd settle in for an hour.
Okay, we have with us Senator Jason Schultz and Representative Brian Best. And so we, each will have about 5 minutes for opening remarks. So I don't know, have you guys decided to? Okay.
Morning, everybody.
Morning.
Nice crowd. A lot of times this time of year that everybody kind of loses interest and we don't have near the crowd. This is a good crowd, so thanks all for coming. I appreciate it. I just want to bring up a few things that my thoughts about the year in general so far. There's a bill that I think is really necessary for Iowa, and I don't think everybody feels the same way that I do, but a hands-free bill that I've been working on for a long time, and 6 or 7 years now. It made it through the Senate, passed 47, I believe, to zero. I think it was.
There were two or three.
There were two or three no's. Can't get it to that.
Brian, could you hold the mic just a little farther away from you?
Okay, now? Am I getting feedback?
It's too much over.
There you go.
Is this better?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. It passed the Senate fairly easily, got to the House, and there were some folks who wanted to put amendments on it that really dragged the bill down. And so I think we had a chance to get it passed this year. It's a bill that in the House, there's just not as much excitement about it as what there was in the Senate. And basically, I think the big concern with the bill is that any time that you give, a lot of folks feel that any time you give law enforcement another reason to pull you over is not a good thing. And I don't think that law enforcement has any intention of using this and using that law in order to harass people. But at the same time, when you have a phone in your hand, the studies and the amount of people that have died because of the electronic devices in their hand, be it a phone or be it an iPad or whatever you've got in your hand, it's costing a lot of lives. And so, because I'm the first guy that was admit, you know, when they came up with the seatbelt law, and I got my first ticket for not wearing a seatbelt, I thought, oh my God, what the heck's this world coming to? And there are liberties that we have, and we have to be careful that we don't become oppressive as a government. This is one that I think, I hope that we can get it passed next year. Another thing I just wanted to mention is that the targets between the House and the Senate have been reached, and that is probably the most important thing when it comes to getting adjournment down at the State House. Is you've got targets. So in other words, what has happened is that the House and the Senate have reached an agreement on how much money we can spend. And once you get that point on, now it's just getting the line items. It's just getting the decisions within those health and human services and those types of committees, RIF, Health and Human Services, administration regulation. All those have to come to an agreement between the House and Senate exactly where those line items will go. But that part of it usually wraps up fairly quickly. So I think there's an outside chance, actually maybe a better than an outside chance, we could be out by the end of this week. And so that would actually get us out on time, which this is my 9th year. So in the past 8 years, I'm not sure how many times we've gotten out on schedule. 1 year we got out a week ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
And us getting out on time is pretty unusual. So this is gonna be a treat to get out on time. And just three other things I wanted to mention is that I think we got to be, as a state, as we're bringing in and we're having good years, we have to give some of that money back to taxpayer. At the same time, I do believe we have some issues that are creeping up that we've really got to be paying attention to. And one is and our prison systems, our prison guards are paid very poorly. We don't even have good comparisons to all the surrounding states around us. I do believe we have to put some money in that to keep prison guards safe and keep them employed. I know a person who was working at Fort Dodge, I think he had 18 years in as a prison guard, and he quit and went to work for Harley Davidson as a salesman. You know, when you hear stories about that the amount of IPERS and things he's giving up, but he's just saying, I don't feel safe going to work. Those are issues we got to pay attention to, and I think we need to do a little bit better job. And another one is nursing homes. And so we've got to start funding nursing homes better than we do on the per diems that we give them for Medicaid, on those Medicaid patients. Medicaid is becoming a higher and higher percentage of nursing home patients that would, maybe 20 years ago, there was a lot more private pay than there were Medicaid. Now that number is becoming higher and higher Medicaid, lesser and lesser private pay, and nursing homes, this is a rural issue as far as I'm concerned. If nursing homes aren't given enough money to survive, they have tons of regulations that cost so much money to be in a nursing home. That's not all on the nursing home. It's the regulations we put on these nursing homes. At the same time, we don't fund them very well. So those are issues, and I do believe we need to continue to fund community colleges in the state very well. That's an issue that we want. We want to keep the state moving. We want to keep the advantages that those schools give us as far as keeping a good vital workforce, and that's probably the most important thing when it comes to skills in the state of Iowa. So those are just a few of my remarks.
Well, good morning, everybody. That all sounded good, and that we're all in line with the way the House sees it. I think we'll be done here in not too terrible long. I was told that Friday is the deadline. If you have a legislative, if you have a policy bill that you're still working on, the budget's not going to wait. When it's done, everything's done. Quite often we have issues large enough that work on the budget will even hold off while we work for agreement between the House and Senate. I think we got our big agreements done for the year, and when the budget's done, that's it, we're going to adjourn. So this last week, and actually going a little bit further back, some major agreements came between the House and the Senate. One that I'm particularly excited about, welfare reform, and that's been a 4 or 5 year project, and the big issue on that is actually, I think it's a pretty easy idea that we can use modern technology to more efficiently, inexpensively, and accurately see who's among those who are on the welfare rolls, essentially the Medicaid rolls, who lives here, who meets all of the asset tests, who are not hiding assets, they don't have a hidden income. And there's modern technology to do that. They're the same companies that make our debit cards work and our credit cards work, and we're just looking for the opportunity to use this technology to scan through the Medicaid rolls. And all they would do is flag the names that have something show up that doesn't look quite right. We would still have human services employees look into those. But the efficiency is gained because those same human services workers would not be going through all 400,000 Medicaid members every year to re-enroll them. So the huge, huge efficiencies, tens of millions of dollars can be saved there. We did a youth employment bill, which addresses the idea that we need to modernize our laws for minors working. There was a tremendous amount of misinformation out there, and I really kind of enjoyed watching some of this. This was a bill that was actually put together by professionals, by workforce development, by labor attorneys, who looked at other states and looked at the current our current laws, and updated our labor laws so that children would have more of an opportunity to learn a work ethic, to build work experience, to just get out in the world. All of this is voluntary. A parent can stop any of this. So a lot of the misinformation that you heard came from, unions first, they led the charge. And then secondly, just kind of the left in general. And I'm afraid that almost introduces the fact that we're in a culture war between two different sides. I think it is in a youth's best interest to go out there, and if they want to go out there and get a part-time job, if they want to go out and make extra money, there should be as few burdens, hurdles put in front of them as possible. Now, so what was accused in the bill was that the children would be working in mines and bars. It was set on the Senate floor, strip bars. I mean, that's just laughable on its face. So the bill started as a wide open bill written by industry and workforce development to just look at all of the hurdles. Through the process, and this was always part of the plan, through the process, it was narrowed down so that it fit the legislature and what we were expecting. So language that you saw here or there that seemed a little bit inconsistent or objectionable, such as an employer is not liable for injuries, is because those injuries were covered somewhere else. And the folks who wrote the bill were not politically thinking, they were just simply trying to address all the code chapters. So going through the subcommittee process, the committee process, the floor process, and then going over to the House, and I think it's out of committee, I think. Everything was brought into line to what now the people of Iowa would expect is a proper bill. There are specific prohibitions against all of the allegations that would put children in danger. One I kind of smiled the most about was you're going to make children work in mines. Well, we haven't had a mining operation in Iowa for two generations, probably at least. The idea that they're going to work in a strip bar is rather comic on its face, but those were the accusations we were facing. So the part that I want to confess to you, the constituents, now, is that I was actually involved very early in the process, and I've actually said this on a radio interview. There's no huge secret suddenly coming out, but this was a bill that was going to be introduced as an agency bill. They missed the deadline to have the governor look through it, approve it, and submit it as a governor's bill. So folks came up to me and said, "Hey, would you file it as an individual bill?" And I think the issue is good for Iowa. I think it's good for children. I think it's good for families. Working is a gift from God. Labor is. I mean, we're supposed to produce and make the world a better place. And if you don't start doing that until you're 18, and if you go to college 22, 23, 24, you're not as effective, you're not going to be as well-rounded, and you're not going to be as well-rounded with skills. So I filed it myself. Immediately, the backlash started from the left, and due to enough years of experience, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to let them just keep shooting arrows at me, because the Labor Committee chair, that now it's called Workforce, we updated that name this year, the Workforce Committee chair was going to run the bill himself. I didn't want him dealing with silly flack off on the side, you know, just all the distractions. I didn't want the Workforce Development or the governor's staff to have to deal with it. I wanted them to work on policy, language, and making the bill right. So I just let them keep attacking me. And I got interview requests from CNN, from The Atlantic. Phenomenally obscene voicemails from Portland, Oregon, Miami, all that. And the whole time I sat back and I could take pleasure in the fact that they were not focusing on Adrian Dickey, on the governor, on even though right quite the companion bill was in the House from the beginning. So I'd like to thank the constituents of Western Iowa for giving me the opportunity. I can take those arrows because we share the same general values of hard work, a work ethic, and of families making their lives better for themselves. So we did that. It finally came out about 2-3 weeks ago. I kind of chuckled that the headline on a blog was, "Hey, this bill started in the governor's office." And I'm like, well, I guess the jig is up, as they put it. So anyway, but we got it through the Senate. We have a 2-year session. I don't know if it'll come through the House. It's through committee, floor eligible. And I think as people look at it, they're going to realize that, well, this is a pretty good opportunity for modernization to let kids grow into productive, well-rounded adults. That's the whole point of it. as I hear people lament, and some of this isn't fair. I mean, I'm going to say that from the children's view. Some people attack this the latest generation as just sitting around playing video games, doing. That's not totally fair. The majority of them are not doing that. They are looking to better themselves. Their families are looking to provide a structure where they become productive. The state's going to get out of the way in the way that we can. So the bill that we have matches other states, other states' hours or updates just to match them or sometimes not even reach some of them. But nobody's working in bars. Nobody's serving alcohol in a bar. Now, that there are some logical steps here. A 16-year-old can go pick up your plate, your salad dish, your whiskey glass that has most of it in it if you didn't finish your drink. They can pick that up and carry that to the bar. There's no reason that they can't bring you the fresh drink there at the same time. They're still handling alcohol. They're not allowed to be the bartender. They're not allowed to decide whether you can or cannot have a drink. That is still an adult's job, and that requires parental permission. So that's the youth employment bill. Another big one, we talked, I believe, about medical malpractice tort reform, putting caps on malpractice lawsuits for hospitals, doctors, and medical providers. We also got we passed a trucker's tort for commercial vehicles earlier. The House made a few changes, sent it back. We sent that down to the governor this week. And this simply comes down to the idea that trial attorneys are getting so good at manipulating juries, they're putting trucking companies out of business. Every single thing in this building came to us on a truck. And if we lose that industry, we're going to suffer for it. So we're trying to protect Iowa there. An ongoing conversation with property tax. I think we've got two of the best ways and means chairs between the House and the Senate that we've ever had in conjunction, working together. Good conversations are being had. The bill that, and this one will shock you here, the property tax bill that we passed off the Senate floor this week actually had five, maybe six no votes there, broadly bipartisan. Because it's a transparency bill, it provides a formula where when assessments go up, valuations go up so sky high like we're seeing this year, it automatically ratchets the levy down to match that valuation so that the average tax does not go up. That means your local elected officials have to publicly raise your tax if they need more money, whether it's for inflation, for higher wages, higher diesel prices, but at least it's all public and it's transparent. Other than that, what's that? Oh, okay. I'm going to stop because we got a good list of questions here, and I'm interested to hear your input. So we'll go back to you, Hubert.
Okay, thank you. The committee put some questions together, and then we sent these questions to both Brian and Jason for them to review and be able to be a little more knowledgeable on what we were looking at. And on the first one is on behalf of our sponsor, the Iowa Corn Growers, do you have any updates regarding issues and policy affecting agriculture?
I don't have a final answer. I don't have a final answer. Here.
Yeah, we got you.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
There is that one working now.
Yeah.
My understanding, the corn growers and the indemnity fund, I don't think is going to go anywhere. I fought the fight for the corn producers, the folks planting. I think taxes are going to go up on them here in the near future. I always resist tax increases, but I think it's going to happen. We just didn't have the support across the legislature. Other than that, I do believe we passed an agriculture CDL bill that makes it easier to get during harvest and planting during seasons to get drivers for everything from anhydrous tanks, and you still need your hazmat and all that, but anhydrous tanks to semis hauling corn and soybeans in the fall. So we addressed that. Those were the two that came to mind.
Ryan?
I'm surprised you resisted the temptation to talk about the raw milk bill. Because I know that's something that Jason's been working on for a number of years. And I would, I'd consider that an ag bill, so that's one that we passed, and I think that is good to go to the governor now for signature.
It is, it is. Thank you, Brian, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I know you've worked very hard on that.
Yay, freedom.
Yeah, freedom is right, absolutely. There was, I believe, a grain excise tax bill, is that right?
Yes.
On corn?
Yes.
Which would be, it would go to, that goes towards the indemnity fund, is that correct?
HF 683, yes. It is $1.1 million. That will help fund that grain indemnity fund for 1 year. So that gives Idols one more year to work on maybe making changes to the grain indemnity fund, but there is policy or existing law that already will require that grain indemnity fund to be funded elsewhere. And that elsewhere is from farmers. If you remember right, and I'm sorry to take up all of your time, for young farmers in the room, the grain indemnity fund was introduced in 1986 at a cap of $8 million. Those funds have been depleted over the last 33 years, and it's time to refund that grain indemnity fund. Again, this is through the Idols. And so most likely, I believe, instead of that triggering, we've hit a trigger point because we've depleted our indemnity funds. Beginning September 1, farmers will now see a quarter of a cent, 1/4 of a penny. Some of you older farmers might remember paying into that grain indemnity fund, right? We have to see that start happening again. But the grain excise tax will help offset some of that. We'll automatically put $1 million back into that fund. And then going forward, farmers will see that 1/4 of a penny going into that, which is completely different than your Iowa corn checkoff. Two separate things. Indemnity fund is Idols, corn checkoff fund is Iowa Corn Promotion Board. Any questions?
I don't really know. What is the indemnity?
The indemnity fund is essentially a low-cost insurance program. It's not a tax. It's a low-cost insurance program that helps farmers that may have been doing business with a first purchaser or a co-op that, for whatever reason, went under or went bankrupt. That insures that farmer that sold grain sold grain through that business to be refunded or to be paid back on grain that they've already sold, but that company can't pay them because they went under. It insures them. Right now, it insures them up to $350,000 back. With this new cap that Idols is trying to introduce of a $20 million cap, I think it's up to $600,000 that they're guaranteed to be paid back, which is only about 85%. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, thank you. The next question is, the second fund law has passed, and next week is the final week for per diem expenses. Do you have any update from the second fund law, what you are expecting for next week?
I think we kind of just touched on it fairly well, that ways and means and property tax that we talked about, which I hope to get off the, it may get off the House floor this week. If it doesn't, it'll be dead. So that and obviously the budget are the two primary things.
I have the same answer. We kind of touched on it. I think Friday is the hard deadline, and certainly for policy, probably the budget too.
Okay, and well, then you're kind of answering the second part of that question is, do you expect to be done with the session next week? If not, what issues are keeping you in your mind?
That's it.
That's right. Okay, the next one is child labor. This last week, the Senate passed Senate File 542 related to child labor. Can you give an update and your reasoning for supporting, opposing to this bill? And you guys have kind of touched on it, but if you want to make some more comments.
I'll just add a few things on the House side. This is some of the things, and I agree with Jason 100%. I think that this bill has been it's been attacked, and I don't quite understand it. It basically says that a 14-year-old now would be able to use a microwave. Okay, I mean, I don't think anybody in this room has a problem with that, and they could not do that by law. They can now work in a freezer, which means, and it does mean they can work in a freezer, but they can walk into a freezer now. And before, they couldn't even do that. I mean, can you imagine being an employer and having a kid that wants to work and say, well, these are the things you can't do, and by the time you cross all those, you mark all those boxes, really, it's almost impossible to employ somebody who wants to work. One here to mention too. The work cannot include mining, public messenger service, outside window washing, boiler room, slaughtering, and meat packing plants. So that was one that was, I think, brought up, is that we'll have kids working in packing plants. We will not have kids working in packing plants.
How about demolition?
I'm not sure where that would be, or I'm not sure what types of work they would do that would include demolition. Can you give me an app?
Well, I think, were they talking like on a roof, you know, taking off old shingles and things, and perhaps?
I will check and see if that is listed on here. I doubt at the age of 14 you could, possibly at 16, but I would have to, there's always some outliers here that I'm not sure about. But that one, I can't tell you.
How many hours did it increase to a week?
I believe it increases the time from 9 a.m. Is it 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. now? They would be able
in the summer.
In the summer only, yeah. And on the bars too, and on talking about bars and restaurants and alcohol, the House version says that it has to be a restaurant, and a bar restaurant and a restaurant are defined. But if you serve more than 50% alcohol, you're now a bar. They would not be able to work in bars. They would be able to work in restaurants that sold alcohol. So there's a little bit of a difference there that would clarify. Yes?
You just said that it was increased for the summer. How about during the school year? And if it is increased during the school year, do they have the option to opt out of it, or does an employer have the right? I'm just wondering, because I was a teacher, and you know, when they start out, some of them work really late and long hours. I'm wondering if they still have the ability to say no to that.
Currently it's 7 o'clock during school, while school's in session, we're raising it to 9 o'clock. Yeah. And then the point of having the option, you always have the option to not work. I mean, you just don't have to do it.
What about the morning? What's the earliest? Well, I know they start at 5. I'm just curious as to what you're going to be expected.
No one tells me here is it.
As early as 7 a.m. year-round is what I've got, Brian.
Okay, yeah. And under the age of 16 can work from 4 hours now to 6 hours in a day. So 6, I believe, is still the max that you can work if you're under the age of 16.
So they can go to school till 4 and work till 9?
If they want to.
Yeah. No requirement. Also, I think that the House version, we really wanted to allow kids to, if they have a school permit, to drive directly to a job. And I think that is a differentiation between the Senate and the House.
We took it out.
Okay.
We took out all the driving provisions.
Right, and so I think the House wants to add.
Oh,
driving.
You do?
They would like to
I had it backwards.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's going to fill the bill, but I think they would like to see the driving provision, so if you're, but you have to have a school permit, keep that in mind, and you have to drive directly to and from work. So you're not gonna have kids that are unable or unqualified to drive. If they can drive to a school event, they can drive directly to and from work with a mileage requirement. You can't go over a certain amount of miles.
You know, you mentioned that this was supposed to modernize the laws for students. I think it takes us in many ways back to the 1800s when kids were stuck in factories. Many of these children, I agree, if they want to work, they're saving for something, that's wonderful. But many of these kids are working because they or their families need extra food, they need help with that, and you're cutting their SNAP programs to get food. So they gotta work more hours. We know that there's 300,000 in Iowa that are food insecure, and you're gonna cut the programs. One of them was a Navy veteran that only got Social Security disability plus $23 in their SNAP things. They want him to take it from him. This is ridiculous. But coming back to kids, you didn't tell the people here that the federal government has said that the Department of Labor, that states like Iowa and other ones who are increasing the workload on these kids that have to work, not the ones that want to work, they've called it irresponsible. You haven't told us that. This is really nonsense. And one of the Democrats, I can't remember his name, tried to bring up the fact that they're trying to increase the workers' compensation if these kids got hurt. They were denied that.
I think I need to cut you off here. You're
why?
Getting carried away.
No, I'm not. I'm asking questions that they're not answering.
If you want to talk with them
after a while. No, I want people to know.
But first off, I apologize for not.
I disagree. Ma'am, I disagree with you on that. You know,
that's fine, but that is what the Department of Labor does.
We're irresponsible for allowing a person who's 14 years old to work more.
We're not
telling 14-year-olds you have to work more.
Well,
we're not forcing. This is not forced labor.
Food, or, well, it's forced if they don't have enough to eat, or.
You're talking about two separate bills. If you want to talk about this one,
talking about kids that are, if they want to work, my kids did too, but they didn't have to work. Some of them have to work, and our federal government says, this Department of Labor says it's irresponsible, and I agree.
I haven't seen that, and so if it's out there, it's out there, but I have not seen that.
It was in yesterday's paper.
Okay, I need to apologize a little bit for not getting all the housekeeping rules up front. And from now on, anybody that asks a question is going to have to give their name, and if they're representing somebody or if they're representing themselves. And so with that said, is there any other questions about what we've covered so far that you'd like to have questions answered? Otherwise, we'll move on. Seeing that, okay, does anybody have a question that they would like to?
Yeah.
Your name, please.
Richard Searle. I represent myself. Okay.
Thank you.
It's concerning to me that the Republicans in the legislature decided, evidently this last week, that they weren't going to answer questions during floor debate. The reason goes back that was stated was that there was a Supreme Court case where a Republican was held accountable for the statements he made misrepresenting the facts to the legislature. Now, in other words, the way I read that, it says if the Republicans can't lie, they choose to remain quiet. There's another option that should be available to this situation, and that is simply tell the truth. Now, you know, criminals have been faced with this situation for years. It's called the Miranda warning. You know, you're going to be held accountable if you're making statements. You know, as far as I'm concerned, an elected official making statements in a public setting, that he should be held accountable just as if he were under oath. Yeah, that's exactly the reason that politicians avoid like crazy having to give testimony under oath, is because they're held accountable to what they say. You know, I'd like to know how each of you is going to handle this situation. You still going to answer questions, or are you going to refuse to answer questions? How's this going to work?
So that started in the Senate this week, and I was actually there in the circumstance where the Supreme Court referenced. And what we ended up having was it was the last days of session. We were running the standings bill. They were talking, they were debating. There was actually an opposition to the policy provision, one of them, in the bill. And the procedure works as, so somebody stands up, and in this case, a Democrat senator, and says, I would like to ask a question of a senator. It was Michael Breitbach at the time. He's retired since. Would he yield to questions? And then the president says, would you yield? Yes, I will. And then we end up, and these are always, they're always a give and take, but through the questioning process, the manner of questioning was argumentative, and I think I'll have to admit, worked him around in a circle, which was the point of the questioning, to just try to embarrass him and get him flustered, and he got off. He did, I'll admit it. So they did that. Fast forward to this year, the Supreme Court comes back, and a utility company sued on that provision that was on that same provision. And the Supreme Court said, we watched the video of the debate. He said things that were inaccurate according to the bill, the text of the bill, and therefore the people voting on the bill didn't know what they were voting on. Well, that part is inaccurate because we actually go through the bills before they go on the floor to work out questions to make sure everybody understands according to the text of the bill what's there. So we had a result of an argumentative, circular argument that got him flustered. He said something that was not accurate. I think that's understood. And then the Supreme Court said, well, therefore, we're going to throw the rule out. Well, attorneys then suddenly get involved and they start saying, well, folks, if the Supreme Court's going to go back and not look at the text of the bill, but the debate on video, it's very dangerous then to answer any questions. Because the opponents, and we've heard, just, I'm really glad you're here and you did a fine job, but you could see the way that the questions are posed, the tone of the questions, the information that's offered that may not quite be, and the information that isn't quite offered. That type of stuff happens on the floor as you go around. So, the Miranda rights was actually brought up by an attorney who said, you actually have to consider you have the right to remain silent, and anything that you say can and will be used against you by the Supreme Court. Therefore, and this was the very first instance where Adrian Dickey, Senator Dickey, said no, he wouldn't yield, and it led to an overnight session that night. But it was because we hadn't worked out how we're going to handle this yet, so the advice from legal was, if you've got a bill that you know they're going to take the Supreme Court appeal all the way, it's dangerous to say a word. So, Steve Holt, Representative Holt from Denison, when he ran the gun omnibus bill, did a very nice job of saying, due to the Supreme Court ruling, I will have to refer you back to the text of the bill and you will have to read it yourself. I remember, I mean, I was watching that because I was fascinated by the bill. Adrian chose to say, no, I will not yield. Which caused angst and punishment caucuses and all of that. We're moving and trying to develop that, not on a partisan manner, but simply because the Supreme Court's watching every word we say. I mean, so that is a condition that exists in the legislature right now. So that's the background.
My name is Patsy Helper, and I represent myself. The Senator Dickey I understand that. But what he wanted to do is not answer. The Democrats had a question they wanted to answer before it was passed, and he wouldn't yield the floor. The Democrats went into caucus and came back, asked him to answer a question on the bill. They wouldn't yield the floor, and they passed the bill. That's not transparency, and it's not all this other stuff you're talking about. If you're that concerned about your Miranda rights, you don't belong in the legislature. You've got to tell people, answer his question. He never even got to say what his question was.
You did a great job of explaining the history, but the question I had was, how are you going to handle this going forward? Are you going to answer questions, or are you going to remain silent and not take questions?
My nature is to answer questions, but I'm going to follow some legal advice because there are bills that the unions, that the left, that the Democrats are going to try to create a legal opposition for during debate to defeat legislation that I think the vast majority of people in this room want to see enacted.
I'm Jean Guy, and I'm representing myself. But I actually had something to say about what she said, but before we get to that, why wouldn't they just say, I don't know right now, I have to look it up? You know what I mean? There's so many other things. You don't have to say something if you're not sure. So, I mean, if they are our leaders, I can agree. If you've run for office and you're in a debate, it's okay to say, I don't know, I'm not sure, whatever. You know, maybe we need to postpone this. But to just, I kind of agree with them. But my other question kind of goes back to, and I'm sorry, but I just want to say that I've learned a lot today, and I really appreciate it. I learned about the corn and all that. I appreciate all of it. But while she was talking and saying that, and I didn't know any of this, what she was saying, but I started to wonder, and I think I've heard, why are we cutting the SNAP? You know, and then if we're cutting the SNAP, did that dovetail to, well, then we have to do this other thing and make it, do you know what I mean? And make it so that the kids can work more. And I just, you know, sometimes I'll agree the Republicans are accused of, you know, not doing as much for the poor and whatever. But don't we have a $3 billion surplus and we're thinking of doing this and this? Why would we take that time to try to nickel and dime the poorest of the poor? Just wondering it. I'm trying to make it make sense. Even though we might have philosophical differences, you know, there should be some things like helping the poor. And I get it. If they don't deserve to be in that category, I think that's fabulous. But why? Anyway, I appreciate all of you. Sorry. But, you know, I thank you all.
There is one more statistic I'd like to point out. This is a national statistic. When you cut SNAP program, the highest rate of the percentage of people who are hurt, first are kids, the second is our veterans. I don't know why we do that to our veterans, much less our kids. So the SNAP program should be top on the list to help out, not cut it. That's my opinion.
Brian, you want to make any comment? Or?
I do. I think the first point was, why don't we say we don't know? That was literally what Michael Breitbach said that was referenced in. So there was an inaccuracy because he got turned around by the argumentative questions. And then finally he just said, I don't know right now.
But he didn't even give the question.
Oh, no, I mean, Michael Breitbach. Well, that's the Supreme Court.
Whatever.
He did not even get to ask the question.
I'm not referencing that. I'm referencing Michael Breitbach, referred to in the Supreme Court. Oh. You asked, why don't you just say, I don't know?
Then how could he say that he said something wrong if he just said, I don't know?
He did both. They were both.
But he
referenced.
Had said something wrong, too.
Okay, in the interest of other questions.
I do have one comeback, not comeback. I guess that was a Freudian slip, wasn't it? There's a comeback. We're not cutting SNAP, folks. It's the feds fund SNAP. We don't have the ability to stop SNAP. We are making sure that people who don't qualify according to the standards to get enrolled on the program are met. If you qualify,
you're carrying a problem that doesn't exist. The fraud is less than 1% of the total.
We got fined $12 million $2 million by the federal government for our error rate, which was $12 million of error. The federal government itself penalized us for not having a system in place. It just is. It, folks, if you qualify, you win.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on.
I'm Janelle Kraft. I'm representing myself and the Iowa Corn Growers. Just for reference, the Farm Bill budget is $1.86 trillion. 86% of that is for the SNAP program.
And then they benefit too, though, correct? I mean, that's one of the good things. Farmers like SNAP because it helps give their product out, right? Isn't that right?
Sure.
That's
a huge number. I mean, that's just for reference. That's huge. 86% of that farm
bill. I didn't
know
that was in it, but that's...
Yes. And there probably needs to be. And I was at a farm bill meeting with Feenstra and Ernst 2 weeks ago, and they are going to start requiring some skin in the game, if you will. They need to. I mean, that's a huge budget. It's a huge budget.
Okay.
Mike Sobel, just representing myself. I would like to see the end to supplementing the tax benefits of solar and wind energy. Solar is only 18% efficient. Wind is only 43% efficient. And there's a huge amount of money that goes material that goes into that, which for some reason they think it solves the CO2 problem in this world, which the CO2 in our atmosphere is only 0.04% of our atmosphere. It's a very minute gas. We are subsidizing these very low efficient forms of energy production. France themselves are going to build 10 more nuclear plants. What we're doing in here to save our atmosphere, China is building 300 to 500 more coal generation plants, which just nullifies everything because we live on the planet. I don't know why. Apparently we must be affecting the temperatures on Mars because they're going up. A big storm on Jupiter is changing. I don't know why people think that we can affect the climate that well. I mean, the moon is changing too, our axis is. But you know, we made a trip to Panama just recently. A friend of ours invited us. Cheap trip. China's all over down there. They got a port down there. You don't see any, one, maybe 10 by 10 solar array. You know, the whole, we traveled. The Air Force, I have stationed down there in 81, just a TDY. The airport now is owned by Columbia's. So you put that factor in with China and everything, why do you think we're getting so many drugs up this direction?
You want to stand to the arc with that, Ryan?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think we have to stay competitive too with other nations, and going completely green is holding us back.
We're subsidizing China slave labor.
Yeah.
You talk about child labor. They are, yeah. They don't care about their people. They care about their dominance in the world.
Yeah. As a country, it seems kind of. And I think we're kind of talking about a national debate now instead of a state debate, so I'll keep this
going. But the subsidies I like to see removed.
Yeah.
I've looked into it several times, put it up. All I'm doing is basically getting benefit of tax deductions.
Right.
The equipment itself is not efficient.
God bless you, I agree with everything you say.
I'm Barbara and I'm representing myself, but I just want to tell everybody today's Earth Day, so we need to celebrate Earth Day. And I think if you're in Des Moines, the Botanical Center is open free to everybody today if you want to go down to that. But also, I just did want to say that the Reduction Act in the federal government has $300 billion. Give $360 billion to give towards green energy. And it's going to be available, but Randy Feenster needs to ask for it, which he hasn't done for the infrastructure bill. So that's just a comment.
Neil Bach, representing myself. Mike, if you ever tour the Badlands of South Dakota and look at the fossils that they bring up,
yeah.
You'll know that South Dakota used to be a jungle. It used to be very warm. There are things there that absolutely could not survive the South Dakota winters, and now we're talking about global warming.
Yeah.
Well, South Dakota, apparently, a lot cooler now than it was back then.
We're, Mike Civil again, we're losing 4 acres a day because of this green, so-called green energy. And you're talking about eminent domain, well, that is just pipelines going underneath the ground. Sure, you're gonna lose production maybe a year, and maybe not as good as production, because we've got some ground that we've borrowed for putting in a road and that. It's never the same. But we're losing 4 acres a day of productive ground to these solar.
Oh, okay. If we want to stay with what we said we were going to finish off at 11 o'clock, it's 5 to 11 according to my watch. And if you two want to have some comment, closing remarks, please do so.
Would you like to go first?
Go ahead.
I guess this was mentioned at a candidate forum actually before the election at the Carroll High School. I guess I'll just wrap up by saying you've heard different issues, you've heard different sides of the issues. I've picked a side. Freedom comes first. Allowing people to be productive and healthy and contributing members of society is valued. Taxpayers should not be penalized. Their taxes should be lowered, not raised. And I just think that there's a movement to destroy America, and I'm going to resist it the whole way.
Ryan?
I think I'm just kind of going a little bit different direction here. I just wanted to mention, I did meet with some city and county folks yesterday, and I'm speaking about the bill on property tax reform. And so, I think that as an elected official at the state level, over the past few years, we've had a lot of issues that concern property tax. And Iowans across the board are concerned about their property taxes, and I'll say that. I do think that in the district that I represent that they do a good job. I think that there are some places that don't do such a good job, and I think in a lot of ways that this property tax issue is coming from certain parts of the state that are having some problems. And I would say one other thing is we're all talking about our assessed values now because the assessments have gone up. The appraised value has gone up a lot. But that doesn't mean that if your appraised value goes up by 40%, it doesn't mean your property taxes are gonna go up by 40%. A lot of people kind of equate those two things together. So, I mean, I don't think that there is a need to panic necessarily because of that. So the bill that we talked about, I think it does do some good things. But I think we do have to, I'm always saying this, we do have to be careful that at the state level that we don't push back on our local elected officials who have a job to do too, and by handcuffing them in certain ways. I do believe that this bill hopefully does reach kind of a, kind of something that's a win-win. It's something that the locals can hopefully support, and the state of Iowa taxpayers also feel like they're being heard too. So one thing I would love to see more of down at the State House is involving local folks down there, coming down to Des Moines and helping us sometimes when we don't ask for that at the state level. We just pass laws, and then all of a sudden we put the local folks in more of a situation where they have to react to what we're doing. It'd be nice to get them involved more when we're writing these bills so that they have a say. And everybody's at the table. So that's all I have to say.
Well, since Jason didn't take quite so much time, I'll bend for you.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to ask, I know that we've visited about schools before, but right now with all the different school shootings and things, and I'm going back to House File 654, but you know, anyway, at Coon Rapids where I teach, a lovely old school, our doors need to be replaced. We need to have doors that lock from the inside and not the outside for the safety of the teachers and the safety of the kids.
And whether or not we like it or not, this is a real problem. And when I, you know, when you wake up in the morning, the first thing you think about is keeping my room safe rather than what I'm teaching for reading. That's a problem. This, I am just asking you, we need better doors at Coon Rapids. We need doors that lock from the inside and that are strong, because that's the one thing the sheriff has told us is what we need. What's the state gonna do for us with the funding on that? Or is there funding?
I guess I haven't seen a line item on doors.
Yeah. School safety. I mean, what are we doing for us? I mean, we're putting up, when you talk about some people not in prisons not feeling safe at school, I'm starting not to feel safe at school.
Visit with your school board and your superintendent?
And I have a meeting with them, absolutely. Yep. There is a plan, but I mean, I think the state needs to be actively engaged in this and supporting us in this effort, because no school is safe. We think we might be.
There are multiple options out there.
They're not. I'm just saying, put that on your radar for next year, because we need this. The schools need this, and every school in Iowa needs this.
Okay, with that, I'm going to bring this forum to a close. First off, I want to thank Senator Schultz and Representative Best for being here today, but also being here the last three other times to take the time to come in and inform us of what's happening in Des Moines. I also want to thank the corn growers and the Dedham American Legion for the facility and the goodies. And then I want to thank the Chamber Board for allowing this committee to function. And I'm a member of this committee that we can have these forums and sponsor and that more people get educated.